During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now.
Well, that's a good one. I just got take a look at that. Have you seen that before?
I have.
That's a good GIF. Well done. I like it. I'm going to have to use that one. Second half of the program begins right now. You get a GIF of a guy giving you, you know, the old number one. You stop. It throws you off a little bit there. Particularly when it's from such an esteemed member of this city's sports community. You wouldn't expect this kind of behavior from that individual. Let's get things started here on the drill. Let's go to Pittsburgh to lead things off. Why wouldn't we? Steelers are red hot. Tim Benz, Pittsburgh Tribune Review, is there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Tim, how are you, buddy?
Shocked, stunned, overwhelmed by the winning streak. Don't know where it came from.
Yeah, this is incredible. I've always been a Mike Tomlin fan. We love whenever the Chiefs, which was kind of every year there for a while, would play the Steelers. Curtis and I work on the our Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show, and we always really enjoyed both of us. Curtis, who really grinds through everything a coach says during the course of the week, loves Mike Tomlin because he's a thoughtful, articulate guy. So we're Mike Tomlin fans here, and when they got off to the slow start, we're like, wow, people are talking about the guy, you know, being fired. First, let's start there. Was it ever actually that, you know, negative within the Steelers organization towards the future with Mike Tomlin?
Within the Steelers organization, I don't think so, but them extending him 1 year shorter than what they normally do was newsworthy and got attention. I mean, that's as seismic as it gets around here, I suppose, when it comes to coaching news. After all, they've only had three since 1969. I think there's been five popes since Chuck Knoll got hired and three Steelers coaches. So, you know, I mean, that's the lineage we're talking about here. Now, you know, Tomlin's getting coach of the year consideration all of a sudden because of the way the Steelers have turned things around from 1-4 to 5-4 with all the injuries and defections that they've had from the start of the offseason until now. But, you know, Adam Vinatieri doesn't miss a kick last week, and maybe Jared Goff hits a fourth down pass, or they get a pass interference call in the end zone. We got a different story, and we're complaining about how dumb Tomlin is for going for it on fourth down or for having a play-action pass to the end zone for a second straight week with a safety. It's a razor-thin line when it comes to winning and losing, as the Steelers have illustrated better than any other team since they went 13-3 and they won six games by last-second field goals, and then they blew it and went from 7-2-1 out of the playoffs for a bunch of games the same direction with missed field goals last year. And you can look just about any game this season, save the Patriots opener, and say that's how the Steelers got to where they are at 5-4. Everything is so thin with the way the Steelers play football.
Yeah, which is a great testament to their toughness and to Mike Tomlin and the whole organization. You're right. Their losses are by 2 points to the Seahawks, 4 points at the 49ers, 3 points versus the Ravens. These are good football teams that they lost to. And the Patriots are a tremendous football team. They did get blown out of that one. But since then, they have been absolute nails. How does it finish? For people who don't know, at Browns, at Bengals, Browns, at Cardinals, Bills, at Jets, and then at Ravens, that looks like a pretty manageable schedule. I mean, I can smell some 10-6 right there. How do you think this one finishes off?
Yeah, if they got through this stretch, and they did, coming out of the bye 3-0, that completely changes my outlook on the season. Those were two wins against the Colts and Rams that, with Ben Roethlisberger, I would have told you they either could have or should have gotten. Without him, I'm surprised they got them both for sure, and now I'm thinking they had 7-10-6 like you. Here's the funny thing. Now we've all started to ask ourselves, so where's the bad Mike Tomlin upset loss out of nowhere to a bad team? When you're 1-4, you're not allowed to think that way because you are the bad team. And now you just listed off all these teams that historically, once they get into good playoff position, sometimes they play themselves out of the playoffs by losing to one or two of those games. Maybe this year it's the Cardinals. Maybe it's one of the Browns games. I think it sucks for the Steelers that they've got this Thursday night game against Cleveland. At least it's a short trip. They can just bust up if they want to. And we'll see how that affects the travel and the Thursday night routine. But this one's a little bit of a trap, and maybe that Arizona game is too.
Well, I've got a Steeler over bet, and I've got a Browns under. So let's get it done. All right. We need
twice
this one.
Twice in 3 weeks, your bet will be affected there pretty significantly in both directions.
Yes, it will. Trust me, I'm a Steeler fan here moving forward and have been. I feel like I've single-handedly brought them back from the depths. My force of will in trying to get a victory in this bet is what's done it. Tell me about Juju Smith-Schuster reacting to Jalen Ramsey. You're never going to be Antonio Brown. First of all, I can't figure out, is that supposed to be an insult or a compliment?
Yeah, precisely. I said exactly the same thing. And by the way, for as much as your force of nature on your bet has helped, I think Minka Fitzpatrick has done a little bit more. Nothing against you.
He was next on my list. You can hit that one right there if you want. I mean, because they were called morons for making that trade, and now they're talking about him being Defensive Player of the Year. Why has it been so successful, and who's the guy in the Steeler organization that deserves all the credit for that?
Well, I think, you know, Colbert and Tomlin are usually in lockstep when it comes to a big move like this. They don't do one without the other co-signing, and it was the same way when Cowher was here. So I'm not going to give blame on one personnel move without the other being blamed. I'm not going to credit one without the other.
Sure.
So I'm going to even that up. As far as Juju Smith-Schuster thing, I would say that the Antonio Brown comment, look, Juju has wed his whole public image, and that's very important to him. He loves himself some likes on Instagram. So the whole Juju Smith-Schuster image is predicated on being the anti-Antonio Brown. So he is not allowing himself to pop off about a lack of targets and a lack of touches. And anytime AB's name is brought up, he's going to be conciliatory and back off because he has positioned himself as the anti-AB for the public, even though I think a lot of people in the media know him to be a different guy than what is publicly presented. I think inside he's percolating. I think he's bubbling. I think he wants to pop off, but I think he knows it'll be too costly if he does it.
All right, so since we won't talk to you before the Thursday night game, who wins that one? It's a 2.5-point line. The Steelers getting the 2.5 at Cleveland. What do you think happens in that game?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like I just said, the history tells you this should be a game that the Steelers lose. But, you know, I've gone against them the last 2 weeks, and they proved me wrong. So I'm just going to go with them until they show me another loss because at this point, with the way that defense is playing, the defense is playing so well. It's overcoming lots of special teams and offensive shortcomings. So that pass rush and the turnover crazy D that they've got, I think, gets them a win. The Browns are a bad matchup for the Steelers because – the Browns have no offensive line to block, and they are a little bit turnover-prone themselves. So I look at Cleveland and I say there's a lot of things that they don't do right, the Steelers do well, and I think that's a problem for Cleveland.
Tim Benz in Pittsburgh, great stuff as always, my friend. Appreciate the time. Have a great week.
All right, thanks for getting them out of the doldrums there with your bet.
In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina.
I do not have a bet on the Panthers, so I will take no credit nor blame on this one. Brett Jensen, WBT, WFNZ, in Charlotte, North Carolina, is next. Brett, how are you, sir?
Just fine, sir.
All right, what is the story with the Carolina Panthers right now? They were the great story about how they were taken off under the backup quarterback, and now things have slowed down a little bit. What is this Carolina Panther team in your mind? Is it a playoff team or not?
I don't think so, and there are a couple of reasons why. I mean, I wrote about it last night. There are a couple problems. One, when Cam Newton was healthy, yes, they lost both games, but both were at home. And moreover, one of them was to Tampa. And that loss is probably going to come back and bite them. I mean, right now, they're the ninth, I believe, in the NFC standings. Yes, they've got, a couple games against New Orleans and a game against Seattle remaining. But, I mean, they pretty much know they pretty much have to win at least 5 more games the rest of the way, minimum, to try and get in. And the thing yesterday, they played really well yesterday. I mean, they what 2 inches short of having a chance to tie the game and go into overtime. And they had 9 drives yesterday, and 8 of them went into Green Bay territory. The problem is the defense. They've got the worst run defense, literally. The worst run defense in the NFL. They've given up the most 10-yard runs in the NFL. Yeah, they they lead the NFL in sacks, but you want to beat them, just run the ball.
Hold my beer, Brett, because you haven't seen the Chiefs run defense apparently yet. It's it'll make your freaking head spin. Trust me. Listen, coming into the year, and I think we talked about this before the season, I think Ron Rivera was like third favorite to be the first coach fired. I think everybody knew it was going to be Jay Gruden, so it didn't matter if you were second or third. But he was up there. That all seemed to calm down when he was winning with a backup quarterback. I don't get it, right? He's never had the Hall of Fame quarterback. I don't think Cam Newton's a Hall of Fame quarterback. You and I have, you know, we're on pretty much the same page with him, which we'll get to here in a second. But you know, I think Ron Rivera is a heck of a football coach. But there are times that you just need a new voice, and maybe you need a new team to lead. Maybe the coach needs a new place to be, and the place needs a new guy with a new message. Where does it stand with Ron Rivera and the future with the Carolina Panthers?
You know, it's funny. It seems like every 2 years, locals in Charlotte have this discussion. I mean, Ron Rivera, two-time NFL Coach of the Year, but has never had back-to-back winning seasons. As a matter of fact, the Panthers, in the history of the franchise, have never had back-to-back winning seasons. All that being said, you know, I thought he was, you know, they were, what, 6-2 last year. Cam hurt his shoulder. This year, everyone thought, okay, they'll be back to where they was before they got hurt. Obviously, the foot and then the shoulder. And I think this buys Rivera one more year. And the reason I say that, next year is the end of Ron Rivera's contract. So he's got one more year left on his contract. And you can say, hey, you know, we had to play a guy who wasn't even drafted this year. You know, wasn't even drafted to the NFL. So starting quarterback, he's gone 6-2 as the starting quarterback for the Panthers. So I think he gets a minimum one more year, because you can always say, hey, look, I haven't had a healthy quarterback in 2 years or a year and a half. What am I supposed to do? Vince Lombardi's not winning like this. So I think he gets one more year. You know, I like Ron Rivera. I'm kind of a Ron Rivera guy. I've sort of been in his camp a little bit. But, you know, as you and I have said a million times, I don't know how you're supposed to win with someone like Cam Newton, who after 8 years still can't read a defense, still isn't allowed to call an audible at the line of scrimmage, and is one of the more wildly inaccurate throwers in the NFL. If he couldn't run, he would be worse than Jameis Winston.
And
so, go ahead.
Well, and I was going to say, and that's where we sit now with him. Does that mean the end is here for Cam Newton and they walk on the final year of that deal?
I think so. I do. I honestly believe that. And so Cam Newton's getting $23 million this year. Next year he's doing like 21.5, 22. But if they buy him out or cut him, they're only on the hook for $2 million. And that's a lot of money you can spend elsewhere if you want to spend it elsewhere. And so, and as you know, the big thing is now, hey, let's try to win with a cheap quarterback and spend all the money everywhere else. Let's try to get to the Super Bowl with a cheap quarterback. And you know, with Kyle Allen right now making $500,000 this year, you know, that's a huge difference where you can spend everywhere. And plus, like I said, salary cap wise, it makes all the sense in the world to get rid of him, because next year is the last year of Cam Newton's contract as well. And on top of that, you don't know. I mean, his foot. They're talking about. Here's the other thing: if he has surgery on his foot, which is a realistic possibility, he will miss all of next year. Yeah. The average return for that injury is 11 months. The average return in the NFL is 11 months if you have surgery, and it looks like he's going to have surgery, and it's going to be in December. Well, that means he's automatically missing 11 months next year. I just don't see any way Cam Newton's back with the Carolina Panthers next year. I just don't see it.
All right, real quick, Clemson. You know, they've fallen. They fell all the way to 4 at one point in the AP poll after being preseason number 1 and not losing. How good? They've got Wake Forest, who's supposed to be like their last big challenge, and they're a 31.5-point favorite against this 2-loss Wake Forest team, who, by the way, as an AP voter, I know hasn't played anybody. Really. How good is Clemson? Do they belong at the top, second, third, fourth? What do you think they are?
They're having their issues this year. Trevor Lawrence, the offense isn't quite what it was last year. There's just some things missing, as evident was that loss to, or the barely winning, beating North Carolina, and a couple other games that they've struggled in. So, you know what? I don't think they're as good as Ohio State. I don't think they're as good as LSU. You know, I think they're right there with Alabama, 3-4. I think they're better than Penn State. I think, you know, than the other teams that are just below them. I could see actually see them losing to Oklahoma, honestly. So I think they're right in that, you know, 3 to 5 ranges, I think, is what they are. Them, Alabama, and Oklahoma, I think, are in that, you know, mix right there. So,
okay.
I mean, but I don't think they have anything for Ohio State or LSU. I don't think they've got anything close to having anything for them.
And they look like they, you know, they're going to have Wake Forest at South Carolina and then an ACC championship game against, I guess, most likely Virginia. Possibly
yeah.
Virginia Tech, maybe Pitt, but that's not going to be a resume builder. But if they win out, they'll be in the bracket. We'll see where it goes from there. Brett Jensen in Carolina. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, bud.
She said the prettiest place on earth was Baltimore at night.
Glenn Clark in Baltimore, Maryland is next. Glenn Clark Radio. Glenn, how are you, my friend?
Seren, everything is great here, man. What would we complain about in Baltimore?
You would have nothing. You've got a dynamic young quarterback that seems to be able to do it all. You've already beaten the team with the best record in the AFC. You'll hold the second best record. The question is, where will you finish? Do you think this Ravens team is a legitimate Super Bowl contender, something we've talked about? And before, the answer was no. The answer is
yeah.
Now yes, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had to completely change my tune on that, Saran. I mean, look, I just don't know how you can look at a team and their actual results of late and say anything other than they're a viable Super Bowl contender. Now, look, this is a long season. There's a lot of stuff that's going to help happen, and they've been fairly fortunate in terms of health. They're playing without Tony Jefferson. They're starting safety, but frankly, Chuck Clark, who's a young player out of Virginia Tech, and then they've slid Brandon Carr a little bit over at safety. They've done a better job than Tony Jefferson was doing. They got Jimmy Smith back. They're super healthy right now. So if they can stay healthy, man, they look as good as anybody, if not better than anybody, not just in the AFC, but we're starting to have a conversation about who in the league looks better than the Ravens have right now.
Is the schedule maybe a little bit deceiving, having beaten the Dolphins, Cardinals? They lost to the Chiefs. They lost to the Browns. They beat the Steelers when they were still kind of trying to find themselves. Bengals, the Seahawks and Patriots are big wins, but there are, you know, a couple of Bengals wins, a Browns, a Cardinals.
Sure.
Is there any cracks that just haven't been exposed here recently?
So the only thing that's sort of left, right, that we don't know about yet, Seren, is what happens when a team takes the Ravens out of schedule. They are so far ahead of schedule right now offensively in each game. That they are arriving at appointments that you haven't even had a chance to cancel yet. Like, they are absolutely doing whatever they want right out of the chute. And so what they haven't had yet is the scenario where they come out and get punched in the mouth. And you could maybe compare this to the Chiefs game, but the Chiefs game, their strategy was just so insanely not based on what their strengths are. They came out to try to win a shootout instead of trying to win that game on the ground, which was a terrible mistake, as you just pointed out, given the Chiefs' run defense. So that's the one thing that's sort of left, is what happens if somebody comes out and sets the tempo themselves, puts them behind the eight ball, and forces them to not be able to go into their bag of tricks and just do whatever they want to do play calling-wise, if they can make them more one-dimensional. Look, Lamar Jackson has thrown the ball really well, but he's been able to do it in scenarios where nobody knew it was coming. He's been able to do it in some blowout games, as you pointed out, and he hasn't been asked to throw the ball 50 times in order to win a football game. So maybe that's the one thing that's still left for us to figure out about this Ravens team. If someone could come out and punch them in the mouth, are they able to adapt and get the job done when teams know that throws are coming?
Is Greg Roman going to be a head coach in the NFL next year, their offensive coordinator?
I don't know why teams wouldn't be looking at it at this point. I mean, anyone who's trying to imagine something new for their own offense, there is so much now. It's remarkable to me that Greg Roman hasn't gotten the opportunity before. You consider what he's done in other scenarios in Buffalo with Tyrod Taylor, who, you know, really, frankly, is probably nothing more than a backup quarterback, with Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, and now what he's done with Lamar Jackson. If you are looking for someone to inject life into your offense, I think he's going to be very high on the list, and I think we're going to continue to see more and more of the approach being, hey, these guys that we didn't think were maybe first-round quarterbacks in the past, we've got to reconsider that and see if their athleticism might mean that we can find someone that can make it work.
All right, they're 4.5-point favorites against the Texans. This is a big one for getting that bye week, whether, you know, you fight your way up to the one seed over New England, but that 2-3 is the big margin. Right now, this is 2-seed Baltimore against number 3 Houston, and the Ravens are favored in that game. Does anybody talk anymore about not exposing Lamar Jackson, about not getting him beat up, or has everybody just decided that, you know, that this is working, don't mess with what ain't broke?
Yeah, Seren, he's so good at avoiding big hits. Look, they probably ran the ball more in the middle of the field against the Patriots than they would have liked to, and they didn't do nearly as much of that against the Bengals, with the one exception where Lamar took off and obviously put on that spin move that everybody's still watching today, the 47-yard touchdown run. They don't want to do that. They want to avoid the unnecessary contact. He is really good at getting out of bounds. He's so elusive. He's so fast. That this thing where we say, hey, you run the ball, you're going to take on contact, but he's not. He's just getting around it. He still needs to get better at sliding. We did see that a little bit more yesterday, but it's still an issue that we haven't really seen him perfect yet, and maybe Robert Griffin III isn't the best guy to teach him how to slide. So that would be one thing I would say. But, no, they're going to continue to play fearless and say this is part of what makes him so dynamic and so good. And, you know, there's obviously risks with every quarterback that's standing back in the pocket and has an offensive line collapsing in front of him and the hits they take as well. So the Ravens are just saying the heck with it. This is who we are. This is what this guy is. We're going to keep doing it.
The Terrapins are number 7 in college basketball polls right now. They've beaten Holy Cross. They've beaten Rhode Island. You know, Michigan State was the number 1 team in the country, but they obviously couldn't get it done against Kentucky.
Right.
Is the expectation that Maryland will fight with Michigan State all the way to the end for the Big Ten championship?
Look, there's still a lot of doubt around here, Seren. You and I have talked about this here. There's a lot of people that, you know, we're so far, we're nearly a decade into the tenure of Mark Turgeon, and Maryland's never done anything since he's been the head coach, that even when there are lofty expectations, there's a fan base here that says, okay, get back to me in March. You know, he's got to prove that he can do that. They're insanely deep. I mean, this is a team that can go 12 players deep with guys that you would give legitimate minutes to. Jalen Smith could end up finding his way into the conversation for a major All-American, and when the season is over, he is a legit big that's going to be drafted fairly early next year. There's a lot to like about this team. They need more consistent scoring from their wings. Aaron Wiggins was the guy everybody was talking about coming into the year. Dante Scott's a freshman from Philadelphia that might be able to move into that role, 6'7" wing type. They need one of those guys to step up and be a more consistent night-in, night-out scorer. They played great in the second half against Rhode Island the other night, but they got off to a sluggish start in that game. So still a lot to learn about this team, and there's definitely still sort of a prove-it attitude around here, but they have the personnel, they have the depth that they could be able to compete at the top of the Big Ten.
All right, Glenn Clark, Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thank you, Seren. You too, man.
Man, I'm out in Texas. Man, I'm out in A-Town.
Chris Domino is in A-Town, Atlanta, Georgia, 680 The Fan. Chris, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing really well. Georgia laying the beat down on the poor little Missouri Tigers. Man, that wasn't very hospitable.
Well,
how good is Georgia in your mind?
Yeah, they're sort of machine-like. It's sort of methodical. It's not eye-popping. It's not Ohio State. It's not LSU. It's not Alabama offense. But the big thing they got going for them, I think this is still the case on every level of football in college. The only team to have not allowed a rushing touchdown this season will be the Georgia Bulldogs. So they wanted to pitch a shutout the other day. It's a really important thing. You never want the second or third teamers to actually get their chance to have that go away. So they're a really good defensive team whose quarterback is a junior, and Jake Fromm is, again, he can do more, we all think, but he's got a young receiving core that's sort of aging before our eyes in a good way. They're okay winning these types of football games. It's a little bit more old SEC. You know, this is the SEC now where Nick Saban said a few years ago, we're gonna go to the line of scrimmage without huddling. This is the SEC where LSU's got a guy who looks like he's going to win a Heisman Trophy. It certainly was the conference of Cam Newton and a few others. They're not doing that at Georgia. And whether Kirby Smart has to go a little bit further into that adaptation at some point, we'll see. If you don't win out, if you don't win a semifinal game in the college football playoff, if you're fortunate enough to get there, there might actually have to be a little bit of a mind shift in what they do around here and how they do it.
The only time they've given up 20 points was in that loss to South Carolina. Otherwise, they've held everybody to 17 or less. They're giving up just barely 10 points per game, 91 points allowed in 9 games. So that
shutout.
Yeah, the defense is phenomenal. Is it good enough to handle Auburn, who is kind of a defensive-minded team? This isn't your classic Gus Malzahn offensive firepower. This is going to be a – what are we looking at here, a 10-6 final between these two coming up?
It could smell like that, but then the ball will bounce a certain way. Somebody will hit on an 82-yarder, and something strange will happen where the game will be – you know, bigger, higher scoring than that. But it's not going to be a juggernaut game. This is not going to be LSU-Alabama, too, and nobody expects it. Nobody can see that type of game.
They're a good enough football team. I think tomorrow night they're probably going to be the fourth best team as the committee of 13 declares, and they come out of their room with their stone tablets telling us everything about college football that we, you know, don't know and can't figure out ourselves. I'm really, at some point you and I have got to talk about the fact that, you know, I don't even know if people know who the 13 are. It's probably not a big deal. They have one guy speak for them. Nobody actually ever has to answer to what it is they did. It's kind of goofy in 2019 to really think about it, because I got in trouble with the guys who ran that thing a few years ago, and I said, I can bring four guys down to the bar, and the five of us can do what they do. You know, yeah. We don't have to go to a nice thread count hotel with a per diem and a nice warm locale. I could do it at any bar you point me to. And I was told, well, I don't understand the process. Well, I kind of do. It's just people sitting in a room debating something that there's no real right answer to.
Yeah, I like that. I agree with you wholeheartedly. 7-point favorites are the Bulldogs to get it done against Auburn. We'll see if it goes that way indeed. The Falcons, it's gone so horribly wrong. How did it go so perfectly right in New Orleans?
I don't know. It doesn't make it. Look, I think Saturdays are a hell of a lot more entertaining than Sundays, because there were real upsets on Saturday. Minnesota fans, students, old people, babies, I saw them storming the field. I mean, there was probably an 80-year gap between the youngest person on that field and the oldest. And you don't get that in the NFL. That being said, I have no idea how the Falcons did this, because there was no indication at 1-7 coming in that they would or could. There was no indication that New Orleans at 7-1, who really doesn't like this team. Peyton doesn't like this team. Breeze doesn't like this team. I think we were all afraid they were going to shove that, you know, fourth touchdown right up someone's hanky to make it a 26-point game and really revel in it. And it didn't happen. It's funny. I heard the guy from Baltimore, you know, high-level problems if you're trying to figure out what Baltimore's problems might be. When you're 1-7, they didn't check one box in their first eight games. I did the pre- and post-game for years for the Falcons. There were some years where it was not very good. These first eight games felt like 4 years. I can't believe there's eight more of them to go. And then they do that yesterday, and you go, I don't know. I you know, you work with guys, and people try to tell you, well, let me tell you what they did. They changed a few coaches, and they let the athletes be athletes. And at the end of the day, it's pablum. There's no rhyme or reason for how it happened, except in the NFL, it's grown-ass men playing against grown-ass men, and sometimes things go better than they had been.
You know, take me back. We talked to when Scott Pioli left the organization. We're like, yeah. What does this mean? What, was this a guy getting off? Did he see this coming? He's like, ooh, I got to get the hell out of here.
Great question. Look, I've always felt that nobody leaves a job unless they have another job. And as far as I know, Scott's not working. So do I think it was his decision solely? No, I don't. You know, I'm not telling you I know the inner workings of the verbiage of that whole thing. But I don't think guys leave an organization just to sit around and hope that somebody calls them. No, I don't think anybody saw the last year and a half being this bad. I mean, I wasn't happy they won three games at the end of the last year and it screwed up what could have been a better draft pick. I don't even know if you would have picked the right guy. I went into this game yesterday thinking, what do I do? I really like Dan Quinn a lot. I really like Thomas Dimitroff a lot. But do I want the pick, or do I want these guys to actually win four games and survive and see if they can go do it again? I mean, personally, I know what I want. Professionally, truth be told, I'm kind of like, I don't know if it's tanking, but I got no issue if you lose a bunch of games in the second half and go get Chase Young. Because the two defensive ends that you've got, the two rush guys, first rounders, by the way, and Vic Beasley, who's been a disaster, and Tack McKinley, who, I don't know, he's better on Twitter than he is on a playing field. You've got to go fill that hole again. And Chase Young is standing there going, yeah, let Chase Young be suspended for eternity. I don't care. Let him go start training and working out. Let him fall to the Atlanta Falcons. Let the Falcons be bad enough where you get them. I hate the fact that I'm not rooting for wins. I enjoyed yesterday. Couldn't figure it out. But I'm not sure I want five more of those in the second half of the year, to tell you the truth.
Is everybody sold that staying the course at the quarterback position with Matt Ryan is the way
yeah.
to go?
You know, again, everybody, I'm sure you've gotten called to the principal's office. You got guys in the building that hear things. They tell you they hear them, third party, fourth party, whatever. I was all for the trade deadline. Everybody's on the block. Now, in this league, it's really strange. The cap ramifications are so goofy. I'm not claiming I understand them. Can you trade everybody in the NFL? No, because there's contracts and caps and cap hits and dead money. I don't understand it all, but I would have been perfectly okay with trading everybody. And, you know, Matt Ryan is certainly a viable option for somebody who looked like they were a hell of a lot closer than the Atlanta Falcons did before yesterday. Julio Jones, I didn't want him at $20 million a pop anyway. You can have him, too. I mean, baby bathwater. I said, keep Grady Jarrett and
put everybody else on the block and see what happens. And I got a call. And, well, you know, that's not how it's done. I said, I know that's not how it's done. I'm just telling you, I'm speaking as a fan. I'm not very happy with what it is you have. And they have no cap room. Like, it's crazy. There's no cap room. You paid Devontae Freeman too much money. You gave Vic Beasley $12.8 million this year for no other reason other than, I don't know, because he was in a fifth year of a first-year deal, you know, or a first-round deal. I'm not sure if it's easily fixed. Yesterday was one of those days where you go, they're going to tease me just enough to make my offseason a little more interesting. Yeah. I think that's really what it's going to come down to. They're going to throw a tease at us.
Chris Domino in Atlanta, always fun, buddy. Appreciate it. Have a great week.
All right, we'll talk to you in a little bit, sir. Thanks.
Feel good!
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He did something no quarterback will ever do again. Get drafted in the 8th round. He's a 2-time Pro Bowler and has as many rushing touchdowns as Joe Delaney. Look it up, it's true. It's time to go from the gun with Trent Green on the program.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk to the quarterback as we turn our attention back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Trent Green is with us, CBS NFL analyst, former Chiefs quarterback, and, of course, a great friend of the program. Trent, welcome to the Sprint guest line, my friend. How are you?
You know what? Good, good. I had to get an early morning flight. I had the late game in Indianapolis, so I couldn't get out last night. So landed to this beautiful weather in Kansas City. So, Yeah, interesting day so far.
By the way, how far back did the Colts and Dolphins set the NFL yesterday?
That was especially the start of the game. The start of the game, it was not very compelling football. But you know what? Give the Dolphins credit. They came into the meetings. You know, they're coming off their first win against the Jets. And, you know, the Colts had lost a tough one to Pittsburgh the week before, and they really needed it, and they were gonna have to do it without Jacoby Brissett. They felt good about Hoyer. They felt good about their run game, but the Dolphins felt really confident in the direction they were going, and they played a solid game, and ultimately got the win. So, big upset for the Dolphins, that's for sure, and really. Really hurt the Colts in terms of that division and what they're hoping for from a playoff standpoint.
Yeah, we very disappointed because we were all looking forward to it. Over the last, 8 days, the Dolphins have ruined what was going to be a glorious Week 16 Monday Night Football of two winless teams, the Bengals and Dolphins, on Monday Night Football in Week 16, playing a game where both of them, we didn't know if they were just going to like fumble the ball. It'd be like volleyball, hit the ball back and forth to each other, trying to lose to get to the top pick.
Who was going to get that top pick? Right?
Yeah. I mean, and now the Dolphins have ruined it. They're going out there and winning games. So it's the Bengals to have. And this,
you know, it's interesting though. The concept, you know, Brian Flores, I've never had a chance to talk with him, and sitting down with him, you know, he's a no-nonsense guy. He started off, he's been with the Patriots his entire career. He started off as a scout. His first 5 years with the Patriots was under Pioli as a scout and learning the personnel side of it. And then he transitioned and switched over to coaching, really coached every defensive position as a quality control guy on up. And just has a really good idea of what he wants to do, the method he wants to use. And it was interesting listening to him is kind of his approach, what his plan was, the way the guys were buying into it, the players had all bought into it, and you consider how many draft picks they have coming up the next couple of years, that'll be a team to watch.
Yeah, it will. We're talking to Trent Green here on the program. All right, the Chiefs, this is one that's been really hard for fans to swallow. This may stun you, but we've taken a number of calls of people that are critical of Andy Reid. Is this, you know, listen, ultimately the loss goes next to his name, and he's done nothing but absorb all of it. He said, this one's on me, it's my fault. But, you know, this is one that I've said a number of times today. Almost every player had some kind of play that had you going, what are you doing? I mean, Tyreek Hill was dropping balls. Mecole Hardman's fair catching the ball at the 2-yard line. Cam Irving started the game with a great cut block on a run, but he got blown up a couple of times, even getting Mitchell Schwartz hurt on one of the times. He just got beat like a drum for a sack. I mean, they had problems all over the field. Are there days that just as a team
you don't bring it? Do they maybe come flat because, oh, Patrick's back, so all we got to do is show up and we'll win the game? Do those days happen for players?
You know, they're never going to admit it, and as a player, you never want to think that, but there is a little bit of that where, you know, I think we saw it all on social media, and it was talked about all week, the fact that Patrick's back, and obviously, you know, over 400 yards and throwing touchdowns left and right, he was back, and it didn't look like he missed much of a beat in terms of the injury affecting him and what he was able to do, and even his mobility. I thought he moved around great compared to what I was expecting him to do, so... you know, sometimes you can get lulled into that, and I think you're right with your assessment that there's enough blame to go around with everybody. I thought there were way too many penalties early on. Penalties affected him again in the game, took away some touchdowns early on, and then, you know, of course, with the special teams. Dave Tobe is, I've said this for years now, I think he's the best special teams coach in the NFL, but that unit, for whatever reason, didn't show up and affected him in a number of different ways. You mentioned McCole Hardman and the fair catch of the two. I mean, there was just a number of things that stood out from a special team standpoint. And then defensively, you know, a week ago we were touting the defense about how they finally made the turn, and, you know, they held the Minnesota Vikings and the leading rusher in the NFL, Dalvin Cook, to under 100 yards, and it looked like things were going great, and then Derrick Henry took advantage of it and ran right through him. So there's enough blame to go around everywhere.
Yeah, I did, absolutely. I mean, this was a group effort, and they should all feel like crap. And I really, you know, I hear the people, you know, clock management, and listen, I don't know that there was any clock management issue here. Guys just didn't make plays. I mean, I know it's easier to have one guy, and that's the old adage. You know, you can't fire a 53-man roster. You can fire a coach. Not that anybody's talking about firing Andy Reid, although there are some of the nut jobs that do think that Andy Reid should be fired. So I guess I should acknowledge that there are some that have actually said that.
Well, that is completely crazy.
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't even make sense. Could there have been some things that were done differently? Definitely. When you talk about the fact you have a 9-point lead, it's in the fourth quarter. But give some credit to Ryan Tannehill and what they did. They had, I believe it was like 11-play drive to go. It was 29-20, 11-play drive. And Tannehill on 3rd and 10 had a 12-yard scramble to keep the drive alive. And he had a couple of big throws late in the game. I mean, the other guys have to do something too. And you know, give them credit for doing it. Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. Believe me, it's disappointing. I was watching the game, and I can't believe that it ended up losing the game. But yeah, it was one of those days.
Do we chalk some of it up to having a bye week in week 12 or week 13? What are they? They're 6-4 now. So week 12, like, they've got the last bye week. Is it just that you've been grinding since training camp, and when preseason football started, they have played a game every single week, and they've played on a short week, which did give them a little rest on the other side after playing on Thursday. But is some of this to blame that they just got kind of a crappy draw on the bye week?
You know, I don't know if you can say it's a crappy draw, because it all just kind of depends on the circumstances. I think they would have appreciated the bye earlier, just because of the number of injuries they have, just to try and get guys back. You know, give Frank Clark some extra time to get back, get the offensive line back and healthy. You know, it's one of the things. If you get the bye early, and you're winning football games and everybody's healthy, you're like, oh, we got it too early. We need to have it later when we're going to have injuries. And then, like the Chiefs are dealing with, they got it really late, and they would have loved to have had it earlier just to try and get some guys back healthy.
What does shuffling that offensive line around? I mean, you were fortunate enough for a large part of your time here in Kansas City to have that great offensive line where guys are just there game after game. I'm a big believer that talented guys don't get hurt as much because they're gifted athletically, and part of what makes them so good is maybe it's more flexible joints or just stronger. They're knocking guys down instead of getting knocked into. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if I looked it up, we'd find that that's just bunk. But, you know, the Chiefs have had just every single game, they're moving things around. And this time happened to actually the one anchor that they've had for over 7,000 consecutive snaps was Mitchell Schwartz. And that went away in this game. How much do you contribute, you know, do you put on that as being why they couldn't finish?
Well, I think you have to. I think you have to point to that. And really, it's along the defensive front and the offensive front, the two most important parts in terms of continuity and timing and everybody being on the same page, those are the two aspects that really need that. And you can't state it enough. The go-to saying that coaches will say and players will say, it's the next man up mentality. We can't use the injuries as an excuse. But the reality is it affects you big time.
You played the position at a very, very high level, a Pro Bowl level, had some phenomenal seasons. So you're a great eye to sit and look at Patrick Mahomes. We're talking to Trent Green, by the way, here in the program. To come back, he was a little rusty early. He had the ball that I don't think it was going to be a pick if it hadn't been called back. It was on the ground, so it's not an INT. He threw another one that maybe could have been an INT in that same first series. And then after that, he seemed to be just his old self. What goes through your mind, knowing how hard it is to play that spot, to see him jump right back in there with a bad leg and play at the level he did after about two tosses? He seemed to be the old guy.
Well, it amazed me that he was back practicing that next week after the injury, and I thought it was going to be crazy if they tried playing him after that short of amount of time. And obviously, I'm not privy to all the different doctor recommendations and what he was going through, but I thought it was outstanding what he was able to do. It's not an easy position to play when you're healthy, let alone when you're hobbled a little bit and it throws off your timing and you're dealing with an injury and something's nagging you. And then as we just got through talking, there are a number of different pieces on the offensive front that we're missing as well. So just from having that sense of security in the pocket and you're dealing with different guys, I thought he was outstanding. The way he moved around, yes, there's some rustiness. Yes, you got to get back up to game tempo and game speed. But I thought it was pretty evident that he didn't miss much of a beat in the games that he missed.
The Chiefs are now tied with the Raiders in the loss column with four losses. Does that – and look, in all likelihood, and you tell me, I'm sure there are some guys, maybe some guys have no idea who the Raiders are going to play. Others, I'm sure, are like me and are well aware that the Chiefs got to go play a Charger team that's fighting for its life right now with six losses, 4-6. They are. Then they get the bye week. The Raiders basically have two bye weeks. They have the Bengals and they have the Jets over the next 2 weeks. In all likelihood, they're going to come to Arrowhead Stadium on a game that's going to get flexed to Sunday night, and they're going to play in a dead heat. They're going to play for first place against the Raiders. Does that focus them? Does that distract them? Do they look past the Chargers because now that game is looming out there? How will they view this situation?
Well, they can't look past the Chargers. The Chargers are one of those head scratchers. You know, you go back a couple weeks and what they did to Green Bay, what their defense did to the Packers, completely shut them down in all phases, the running game and Aaron Rodgers, until the very end when Rodgers got some yardage in the fourth quarter. But you can't overlook them. You can't overlook them at all. You'll get embarrassed if you do that. So I think they go down into Mexico City, and I think they, you know, they're going to go down there focused, trying to win. And Andy Reid has a great record against this division. And then you understand you have a bye week, try and get some guys healthy, try and get back and get ready to roll. But the Raiders, I had talked about them a couple weeks ago and said with the Charger games coming up, the Chargers have beaten them four times in a row, and the Raiders and Chargers had to play twice. And the fact that the Raiders got that win, and then as you mentioned, now the Bengals and Jets, on the horizon. Their schedule is very favorable. The Chiefs are the only team on their schedule that have a winning record. So, Kansas City can't overlook the Chargers, but they better be ready for the Raiders when they roll into town.
Yeah, all of a sudden this loss blowing that game down in Tennessee has made this division an absolute dogfight, and that's a scary proposition now for this team. And so hopefully it focuses them and they get a little healthier here coming down the stretch run and they're ready to go. They do have that bye week looming over the horizon. We're talking to Trent Green here in the program. Trent, time for the Final Four. It's brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute, KC's first and only hospital dedicated exclusively to orthopedics. They've even got an ortho urgent care. That's open 7 days a week, perfect for treating things like high school football injuries. You can find out more at kcoi.com or by calling 913-319-7633. I will start you with this one. What is the Chiefs' final record when it's all said and done? What are you feeling right now?
Wow. Without going through the whole thing, as far as like who's in there,
I can rattle it off for you if you want to take a look. It's just now we're down to six games, so it's,
you know, I would think if they go 4-2 in the final six games, I mean, get 10 wins. I think 10 wins would probably win the division.
Okay.
I think at the beginning of the season, I think I told you 12, but there's a couple of these I didn't think they'd lose. So I think 10 would get the division done.
Okay, okay. So then who wins the AFC West?
Oh, I think the Chiefs still do. I think when you look at what Andy's record is against the division, you have to lean in that direction. The Raiders haven't been very good on the road this year. I want to say they're 1-3 on the road right now. So I think it's favorable for KC.
Chiefs are headed to Mexico City. Have you ever been to Mexico City?
I have not. No.
Okay.
No, I don't. I don't really know much about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was forbidden from making that trip. My wife said, no, you are not going to go down and drink Coronas in Mexico and watch football. I will not allow you. So I wanted to go, but I was forbidden. So,
yeah.
All right. You mentioned Scott Pioli. I'm curious, does Scott Pioli ever get another GM job?
You know, I don't think so. I think he'll stay in personnel. I think he'll continue to help out, teams, but I don't know if he ever gets that that main title back.
Interesting. Trent, great stuff as always, my friend. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you then. See you.
The Program with Seren Petro. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. Lamar Jackson, second player in NFL history to have a perfect passer rating twice in the same season. Who was the other? You said you knew the answer.
Ben Roethlisberger, baby.
2007.
Yeah. Did he do it in back-to-back games?
No, we thought about that. The back-to-back thing he did, which we both remember, because I'd said the exact same thing, too. 6 touchdowns, no interceptions he had in back-to-back games.
Is that what it was? Okay.
But not the 158.3.
Lamar Jackson's the real deal.
Yep.
Looking pretty good. I do. I still wonder what he'll look like when he doesn't have the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he just drops back and throws. But I think he's going to be good. He just might not be as spectacular and great as he is right now. But give the Ravens credit, man. They're going with it. Yep. They're rolling with it. And I think Greg Roman's going to be a head coach. He should be, right?
I'm surprised he isn't already.
As production he's had with the quarterbacks that he's had.
Yep.
Great stuff. We'll talk some more NFL football, more Chiefs football as well. Adam Schefter. From ESPN, you'll see him on Monday Night Football tonight. Of course, you'll hear that here on 810.
The burnt end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, before Mecole Hardman, who was the last Chief to have 5 TD catches in his first 10 career games? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.